One of the great things about living in a city like Chicago is that you get to see musicals being born. Before they go to Broadway, a lot of big shows get tested here in the Windy City to see if it's a smash hit or a stinker.
Today, we're taking a look at the promising new musicals being unleashed first in Chicago. The Cher Show, Tootsie, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, and now running, Pretty Woman, the musical.
Join us for this and all the hot news. A man gets caught cheating on his wife because of what he was liking on Instagram.
The last of the notorious public art sculptures of Trump naked is up for sale.
The fine felon, Jeremy Meeks, has knocked up a billionaire heiress.
And Call Me By Your Name screenwriter James Ivory is disappointed there was no full frontal nudity in the Oscar-winning film.
I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
And this is Feast of Fun. If I could turn back time, if I could find a way, Wilbur. Oh my God, so many good musicals are coming to Chicago. Wow.
I know, I'm excited. The Cher Show is coming up. It's going to open up, I think, late May or in June. We've got tickets to go see it in June. One of our wonderful listeners bought us some tickets. He's like, I'm coming to Chicago and we're going to see the Cher Show.
June 2nd at the Oriental Theater. Bob Mackie's going to be doing all the costumes. Bring his entire... He's basically like... been making Cher's costumes since the day she was born.
Basically, a lot, you know, since the 70s and all of her iconic looks. Though, when you think about a lot of the things that she's worn, he's made it. Now, of course, I'm sure some of them, he's not just going to be pulling stuff that he made before, but probably like reinterpreting it for a modern audience, I would think.
Well, he also is going to have different actors playing Cher throughout the years. I guess the premise is that we're watching a taping of the Cher Show. And so it's kind of... sort of having a lot of flashbacks.
Oh, wow.
Which I really like non-linear musicals. I hate it when, like, the musical begins, you know, to the couple meet. Like Pretty Woman right now.
Right.
It's like they meet, you know, the hooker and the millionaire meet. They fall in love, and he gives her a diamond necklace, and he snaps her hand in half.
Very, very linear. And so this will have lots of flashbacks. Well, you know, it's great. It's it'll be interesting to see how they handle the whole Sonny and Cher thing. Will they handle Chaz's transition? What, you know,
we'll see,
what's
going
to go on? And of course, you know, when you look at the Cher Show or the Sonny and Cher Show every week, there is some kind of guest star on it.
So they're going to bring a lot of these guest stars, Tina Turner, you know, all this stuff. It's going to be off the hook. Like all those guest stars from the Cher Show are, you know, a lot of this is speculation and rumors because you're sort of like reading blogs and different people who are like, you know, they're still in development. So they might just be like, you know, we don't need to have Tina Turner in this thing. But it's going to be an actress playing Tina Turner.
Sure,
it's
going
to be an actor playing Sonny Bono. You know, it's going to be an actor playing Chaz Bono. So we'll see. We'll see who's going to make it and who's not. I certainly hope they recreate that infamous moment with Kate Bush, Tina Turner, and Cher, where they did a Beatles medley.
But they'd have to pay for the Beatles stuff, and I don't know if they can afford that. Because they're just using Cher's music, right? I'm sure they're going to write some original stuff for it, right?
Correct.
But it's basically going to be what they call a jukebox musical.
And, you know, and that's pretty much where we are today. Like, movies are based on comic books. All TV shows are reboots. Everything's a reboot.
Well, you know, it's hard. You have that brand recognition. And it's like, once you have something, people already know it. They're already familiar with it. You know, take, for example, Fausto and I just saw tonight, Pretty Woman, the musical. It has the music by Bryan Adams.
Yeah, like Cuts Like a Knife, and you know, it's like the summer of 69. Those were the best days of my life.
And so also,
and none of that was in this.
No, none of,
sadly.
I think a lot of it had some 80s kind of feel for it. You know, there's some 80s kind of, because the show takes place in the 80s, so I definitely had a bit of an 80 feel.
I would like if, and just anybody who's listening to this podcast who's going to be working on musicals in the future, if you hire Bryan Adams.
Yeah.
You need to force him to bring Summer of 69's score. You know, bring the hit songs. If you're hiring these people because they're celebrities and they're known for these songs, like Cyndi Lauper, you know, with Kinky Boots. Kinky Boots works as a musical so well because Cyndi Lauper's greatest hits are in that musical. And so a lot of heart and soul goes into putting these shows together. And I feel like Pretty Woman is definitely, you know, still hustling.
Well, that's the thing is, like, when shows, they come here to Chicago first to kind of test them out, see what works. And so what eventually comes to, because it's only here for 5 weeks and then it's going to Broadway. And what you see on Broadway is often sometimes a markedly different show than what you're going to see here in Chicago. And, you know, Samantha Barks, who played Eponine in the movie Les Mis, she plays the Julia Roberts character.
She was the odd woman out who was in love with the young rebel.
Yeah, and she gets killed in Les Mis.
She butches up. She cross-dresses to be a revolutionary.
Oh, is that how it works?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. She cuts her hair short and puts it on a cap. She's like, just to prove that she loved this guy.
I will be at the barricade.
But,
yeah, you know, yeah, the thing is, with this movie is like, you know, the movie is so
Pretty
well
Woman.
Loved. Pretty Woman is so well loved. It grossed like $500 million when it first came out. It made Julia Roberts a star. I mean, she was a star all throughout the 90s just because of this film. And I knew so many girls because I think I was like just out of college at that point in time. And I knew a bunch of girls that had seen that movie like five times because I think it allowed them to like, hey, A, be a whore, and then also
embrace their sexuality.
Embrace their sexuality is what I mean.
Yeah.
And then, but also be like, hey, I could also really marry up, you know?
I can be part of this system. Mm-hmm. I can be a capitalist and a rebel at the same time.
Exactly.
I can embrace my sexuality and also conform to tradition. Mm-hmm. It's ultimately what Pretty Woman was about. And all the women that we were, because I, you know, always look at the audience and these kind of things. We went to see the musical, and I turn around, and the women who were fans of this had huge smiles on their faces. They were gobbling this show up.
Well,
I hadn't seen Pretty Woman.
Yeah, I mean, the movie actually, it came out like 27 years ago.
And I was just like I was kind of in the dark about it all. But I was like, this musical is taking some risks because it shows two scenes with blowjobs in it.
Well, one's a blowjob and one's cunnilingus. I was kind of surprised. You know,
isn't cunnilingus still, you know, oral sex, right?
Yeah, but they don't
call
it.
Oh, they don't call it a blowjob.
No,
okay.
No. They call it eating out.
Well, there's two oral sex scenes.
Let me explain to you some heterosexual lingo, okay? It's
oral sex.
It's eating out. It's munching beaver.
But I'm
it's
sitting there munching, with, you know, the blue hairs Mop that go diving. See these Broadway musicals, mm-hmm. and they're like, honey, do you think you could try that on me tonight?
And so that's the thing. You know, he hires this sex worker to come to his, you know, to drive his car. Then he's like, invites her up. I've got you for an hour. Like, why don't you spend the night? And so then she goes to service him. And he lays back on the couch. And then her head goes in between his knee, you know.
His legs. He's
and
giving
then,
him a blowjob.
And then the lights
giving...
go down. And you're just like, am I really watching a Broadway show where somebody's getting a blowjob?
And then the Richard Gere character goes, suck my dick!
You bitch!
You hoa!
And he starts grabbing her head and forcing the cock, and she's like, rah, rah, rah,
I was like, this musical is out of control.
Yeah.
That didn't happen, but it felt like it did. That's the thing about it is, and I'm the most progressive, liberal, I want to see nudity, sexuality, and a show, but it just felt so out of place in here.
Yeah, at the Oriental Theater, I think.
Well, I want to see that kind of work there, and I appreciate they're taking risks to showing that aspect of the film. Mm-hmm. In this Broadway musical, but just it felt like it was neither here nor there.
You gotta kind of, when you're getting given a blowjob on stage, you gotta finesse it a little bit. You know what I mean? It's gotta come from somewhere, and it just kind of seemed like it was, I guess, but maybe he's a businessman, she's a business
woman.
Person. They're both business people. And so
they're selling different things?
Yeah, they're just selling different things. And so it was very transactional. So I guess maybe that was the idea.
Yeah, I felt like I was the John and the musical was the sex worker and was trying to give me pleasure in what it thought I wanted, but just like somebody who's not enjoying being a sex worker is doing it dispassionately.
Yeah, and what's weird too about the movie is there's so many iconic moments in this film that they just lose their luster on the stage. You know, there's the scenes where she's like in the bathtub that are fun. There's the scene where she gets like her finger snapped with the jewelry box. There's the thing where she goes into the clothing store and says to the people who refused her service the day before, she's like, do you guys work on a commission? Well, big mistake, you know, and it's so much fun. But when you watch it, you already know what's happened, and it just doesn't have that same oomph.
Well, you know, like I think about successful film adaptations to Broadway musicals, I think about Mary Poppins. Mm-hmm. And I felt like it was really a great, refreshing surprise when they introduced the evil Mary Poppins.
Oh, yeah.
And all these other characters from the books that weren't in the film, mm-hmm. and take the show in a whole new direction. Mm. And so it gave us new life to a story that we were familiar with. Mm-hmm. A broken family being put back together by the magic of this good witch, Mary Poppins, right?
She's a force of nature.
A force of nature. And in Pretty Woman the musical, it's really about these two sort of incompatible people coming together through, it's a lighthearted comedy. It's a romantic comedy, but it didn't have that in this musical. It felt like I knew what was going to happen, even though I hadn't even seen the film. Mm. And so I felt like I would give Pretty Woman a pass, but I definitely think the Cher show that's coming in June, mm-hmm. is something you definitely don't want to miss.
But I think though with us though too, is like, we're two gay dudes. I think if you're a person has a real emotional attachment to that movie, that you probably will enjoy it. It'll probably be fun to kind of revisit some of those moments. Whereas, like, I like the movie enough, but I'm not emotionally attached to it.
I think another show that's been struggling a lot is Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, mm-hmm. that's right. coming to Chicago in October. Mm-hmm. Now, this is a musical done by the same guys who did Hairspray, the musical, Shaman and Whitman. And so, you know, you guys are familiar with "You Can't Stop the Avalanche as It Races Down the Hill." And they're definitely going to bring a lot of the songs from the film with Gene Wilder. Mm-hmm. And from what I read, the London production was the first place they did it. And a lot of critics said it was too elaborate and had too many puppets and too many gadgets on the stage. The show is the Basil Twist, who did Pee Wee on Broadway, is doing all the puppetry for the mm-hmm. show. And instead of having little people playing the Oompa Loompas, they're actually doing it mm-hmm. with puppets.
Now, you were telling me before we were recording that they've actually done this in London and they did it in New York.
And
they've retooled it.
So they keep on messing with it.
It's kind of like a world premiere here in Chicago.
And that's how they're selling it to us, yeah. too. So this is like, they're just keep doing it until they get it right. Mm-hmm.
And then maybe it'll go back to Broadway.
And that's the hopes, is they're bringing it back to Broadway. Mm-hmm. They've gotten rid of the entire cast. And what I would really love to see is the actor Gavin Lee, who played Bert in Mary Poppins and Squidward in SpongeBob the Musical, to play Charlie. Willy Wonka.
He might be free, because I think that closed already, didn't it?
Mm-hmm.
SpongeBob, I think, closed.
Yeah, and I think he's probably one of the most brightest stars in musical mm-hmm. theater right now. If you ever get to see this guy, Gavin Lee, mm-hmm. he just is just an amazing mm-hmm. performer and really disappears into all the characters that he plays. Just this fluid, powerful singer, just dynamic dancer. He's basically what Bert was trying to be in Mary Poppins in the film, mm-hmm. Dick Van Dyke.
Mm-hmm.
And in this, whenever he's on stage, he's just this dynamo, a jack of all trades. Mm. So I would love to see him cast in this and bring that manic, playful, devilish energy that Gene Wilder brought to Willy Wonka into the readaptation, the third readaptation of this musical here into Chicago. They're going to keep all the songs. Who can take the sunshine, wrap it up and pray?
But there's
the Candyman can.
Mm-hmm. Well, how many songs are there actually? I feel like in the movie
there's no way the wind is blowing where the weather's going.
There's really just a few songs, right? Just a handful.
The songs that the kids sing.
Oh, the kids sing all songs. Yeah, they do, huh?
And world of pure imagination, come with me and you'll see. So it's going to be a fun show to watch, mm-hmm. even if it has its problems. There's lots of puppets. It's also crazy. Hopefully Jackie Hoffman, she's been touring with the show or in every version. She plays Mike TV's mom as a pill popping June Cleaver. And people say that she steals the show.
Oh, wow. Well, she's a brilliant actress. Now, in the movie, because I read the book, the story behind making of the movie, originally it was going to be the person who played Jean Stapleton, who played Edith Bunker. She was going to be Mrs. Mm-hmm. TV. And she was talking to the casting people or the producers that were making. She's just like, well, you know, I mean, I could do your movie, but I'm also up for this other role. And they're just like, just take the other role.
It's, what was it? Of Edith Bunker.
Of Edith Bunker, yeah.
Oh. Archie!
You know, it was a great career move for
I always her. Felt, because when I was a kid, mm-hmm. watching All mm-hmm. in the Family, mm-hmm. it was hard for me to distinguish that these were actors playing roles. And I always felt that, because my parents fought a lot, that Carol O'Connor was really like that in real life. And he was, like, physically assaulting mm-hmm. Gene Stapleton, Edith. Who played Edith. Yeah.
Well, you were kind of a dumb kid. But, but you know, now we have Roseanne, who basically is...
She's the Archie Bunker, yeah.
Who actually is Archie Bunker in real life.
And folks are like, boycott this show, mm-hmm. it's normalizing. Mm-hmm. I am disturbed by the fact that it is normalizing Trump's mm-hmm. not-so-normal politics.
Some terrible things about, like, the Parkland students. She's, you know, she's a TERF. She said horrible
trans-exclusionary radical feminist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She's not a very kind person, and the actor, the person mm-hmm. who is Roseanne Barr, and it's unfair to be celebrating and rewarding that kind of behavior. Mm. At the same time, you know what? That show's going to succeed or fail on its own steam, and it's not going to be because of me any boycott. Mm-hmm. Actually, a lot of us talking about it got people wanting to watch to see what the train wreck was going to be. And it was actually a lot of fun, but it's not a show I would catch, but, you know, I hope it doesn't impact our real political problem that we have in this country, that we basically, the Republican Party and the president are colluding with the Russian government, with Putin, to turn this country into a dictatorship. Mm. And that's really disturbing. And you care about democracy, you know, like Roseanne Barr says, you don't want the president to fail, but the president wants the country to fail. The president's there to make the country fail.
Mm.
One musical that I don't want to fail is Tootsie.
Oh, I hope it's good.
That's coming in September 11th. That's going to be starring Disney's Frozen, the guy who did the voiceover for Frozen, Prince Hans.
Oh, the evil one.
Yeah. Santino Fontana.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be built on it's going to be an adaptation of the 1982 film, but without the song from the movie. So
go Tootsie, go. Go Tootsie, go.
And more importantly, Stephen Bishop's It Might Be You. Maybe it's you I've been waiting for all of my life. It's not going to be in that. I'm like, I don't know. I'm worried.
That was nominated for an Oscar. That was such a big song.
I can't believe they wouldn't attach this to this project.
Sometimes it's like it's not worth the price to pay because, you know, these
spend
composers,
money.
They need to be paid money, and they don't want to spend that kind of money because they're like, we can just write our own new music for it. And sometimes they want something new. They want something fresh. They want to cash in on the idea of a down and out actor who tries out for a role on a soap opera as a woman because he's so desperate. And that's the thing. And that's that forced feminization fetish right there. It's like, I don't want to be a woman, but I guess I'll have to if that's what it takes to make it in this man's world.
Now, the script, the book writer is Robert Horn, mm-hmm. who's worked on a lot of Dame Edna shows. He's a comedy writer. So the musical has a lot of potential to be hilarious.
Every time I think of Dame Edna, I always think of Apu and The Simpsons going, oh, my God, I haven't seen you since we watched that horrible Dame Edna special.
That's not. We haven't seen each other since we were on that stupid Dame Edna special.
Oh, okay. Is that what it was?
Where they were like pretending to be like the Beatles. And a one, and a two, and a three. Boom, 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 boom. Baby on board. How I've adored the sign on my car's window pane.
Such a classic episode.
Yeah, and at the end of it, George Harrison rolled down his window, mm-hmm. sees them performing on the top of a building, goes, it's been done. So if you want to check out these shows, you can go to BroadwayInChicago.com and get yourself a membership, a season pass. And that way you can see them all and decide for yourself if these are shows that you think are exciting or, as we say, is a smash hit or a stinker.
Mm.
I definitely think the most promising one two in the bunch is a Cher show and Tootsie, even though Tootsie doesn't gonna have Stephen Bishop's iconic song. It's still, you know, has some really good people attached to it, and when you have a good writer, that's really at the heart of what makes a good show. And strong performers too,
without a doubt. Fausto, I was just checking on the GoFundMe page for your Help Fausto Fight Cancer.
If you just started listening, I have cancer.
Fausto has cancer. He had some cancer removed. Might have to have some more removed.
Cancer bells. Magic cancer bells.
You need a special bell. You need a special one for that, because...
Well, I want something pleasant.
Oh, okay.
You know.
So the total right now of your $20,000 goal is $2,496. And folks,
and you know, I'm extremely moved by people supporting. I know a lot of you guys have been listening to the show for over a decade, and it's beyond words what I can express, because you know I'm really scared of how expensive this is going to be, just getting these surgeries and treatments to cut all this stuff out. So I have stuff on my arm and the shoulder, and then there's stuff on the top of my head. And so, so we're proceeding with this, hoping that we can cover all these costs and just taking time off work and to try to recuperate from it. But I'm here doing this podcast, you know, it's like, I love doing this show and I will do it from my deathbed, man.
And that's why it's like, it's important to support this, because it's like, you know, I want to support you so you can continue doing what you love, because you give so much to so many people. You provide such an important voice to so many disenfranchised artists who are able to come on here and talk to an international audience. And I want to keep that going. I want to support you to be able to continue to do that. And I want you to be healthy and happy.
And people are sort of wanting, you know, I sense there's a pressure or desire to like give people what they want to hear, which is like, everything's fine. Everything's wrapped up and it's done. We just don't know right now. The prognosis is good. Like the doctor's just like, you know, it's going to get expensive, but we got this. We got this early. The one on my head is more dangerous or confusing, so we don't know enough about that.
Because you can't afford to lose any more of your head.
How's your head? Haven't gotten any complaints yet. But I'm, you know, I'm a person who believes in the power of humor and to looking at really painful and difficult things. And if we can't laugh at you know... at pain and suffering, then it is won us over. It's
you gotta keep laughing to the end. Now, thousands of people listen to this podcast every single day, and at this point in time, we've done one day. 39 people have come forward and helped raise that $2,496. So, if you're listening, whatever you can donate, $1, $5, $10, $100. Maybe you're super wealthy. $10,000.
Well, one thing you can also do is you can donate your social media space. You can write a post on your social media saying what I've meant to you guys over the years.
Yeah.
What I represent for you, and ask your friends to pledge any amount of money would be fantastic. You know, somebody, one of our listeners, Kappa Pride Hulk, he wrote a really mean, sweet message here. He said, "This scar in your shoulder is not a monster bite, but a badge of strength."
Aww.
"A friend of mine got heart surgery, and he was always feeling self-aware of his scar. And I have to say to you what I've told him. Those who love you will not see a scar unless you want them to. That's what you mean to us."
Aww. You mean a lot to me, and you mean a lot to your family and to your friends and to all the people listening right now.
You know, and you know, this is a great opportunity, in a sense, to step back and appreciate life and the people in your life and what it means. And, you know, if I stop to think about it a little bit, I get really choked up and deeply moved. And part of me is like, I'm an entertainer and I'm a showman, and I want to, you know, keep the show going. And there's some times when I just want to, like, you know, get underneath my bed and cry, because this is so hard to do all that we do. And, you know, we have rely only on the listeners of this podcast to stay here. And Mark and I also work other jobs just to be here. And it's we've sacrificed a lot. And, you know, I'm willing to give my life up in a sense. And my life is on the line. It's hard. And you know, I wish I lived in a society that getting sick didn't mean going bankrupt. This is like a nightmare because I always was a person who, you know, I've been relatively
healthy
and, you know, straight laced.
If anybody should have cancer, it should be me.
It should be you. You've spilt more than Lindsay Lohan's ever done. What is that expression?
I've spilled more booze than, you know, so-and-so's ever drank.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we don't live in Los Angeles either. It's a miracle that we managed to do the show from this little apartment all these years here in Chicago that thousands and thousands of people all around the world are listening to. And it's an honor to be able to speak to all these people.
And we want to keep on doing it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. T.S. So, Maddox, speaking of talk show hosts.
Let's give the URL, right, though. So it's GoFundMe.com / Fausto.
Yeah, F as in Frank, mm-hmm. A-U, S as in Sam, mm-hmm. T-O.
So donate if you can, and if you can't, maybe share it as your social media status. Put it on Twitter, say what, you know, Fausto means to you, say what the show means to you, and see if we can't raise that money.
What do I mean to you, Mark?
You mean the world to me, baby.
You mean the world to me, too.
Oh, thank you. So T.S. Madison is back. She's changed
T.S. Madison.
She's changed it from the Queen's Court because she had that falling out with Kaya. And now she's changed it to the Queen's Supreme Court.
Order in the court. There will always be order in T.S. Yeah. Madison's court.
I guess she had Tiffany Pollard as a guest judge, and people really liked it. You know,
that's New York.
That's New York from the Flavor of Love. And
Flavor
I love New
Flav.
York. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah. So it's interesting. You know, that's the thing. It's like what we've always said on this show is like man's rejection is God's protection.
And what one woman won't do, another one will.
No, what one bitch won't do, another bitch will. Yeah, that's for sure.
And, you know, I just don't understand the whole thing with Kia. Like,
she had a mental breakdown. There's just some people, you know, she has an artistic bent and she has ideas in her head and she wants to get them out into the world, but she doesn't always necessarily know how to do it. And something just happened between her and T.S. Madison and she broke.
It's hard to ask for space.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I found myself in that situation here. You've found yourself in that mm-hmm. situation doing the show. Couple things, like sometimes the conversation unfolds in front of you and you're not there. And you have to tell the people, like, please include me into the conversation.
What are you talking about?
And when you're doing a talk show, sometimes, like, you know, if there's more than three people.
Oh, they try and railroad you or something?
Yeah. And so it's really sometimes hard to ask, hey, I need your attention.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing is sometimes guests just don't want to be there.
Mm-hmm.
And other times, I found this really thing fascinating is that sometimes the best thing you can do if you're doing this kind of program is just to be there in the background. When you're doing it right, people won't notice you've done anything at all. And like everybody wants to have a talk show, but nobody wants to shut up and listen and ask questions. And I noticed that like a lot of these girls from RuPaul's Drag Race, especially, they're like, I'm going to become a talk show host. And then they, you know, VH1 or Logo or whatever. It's like, here's your talk show. And then they're like, and I'm like, bitch, I've been interviewing these drag queens for fucking 20 years now, almost, you know? And I'm like, I'm for hire, and I look great in a pair of pantyhose.
We'll get your agent on it.
Yeah, really?
Do you have an agent?
Isn't that your job?
Honey, I'm nobody. I'm barely an agent myself.
Justin Jedlicka, the human Ken doll,
uh-huh.
Spotted with Australia's Prime Minister, Malcolm Trumbull.
Well, that picture came out a little while ago, but now we kind of got the background story from it. So I guess they're not really sure who signed him in. They had some photos, but one of the security details said that they recognized him from XTube. Because I guess they try and like know who all the embarrassing players are in the world. And so they was like, after the photo was taken, he was quickly ushered out.
So does that mean like if I manage to sneak in to like hang out with Malcolm Trumbull. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't get escorted out because I...
Because you don't have an XTube account?
That's a good reason not to get one, right?
Well, there's lots of good reasons not to have an XTube account, that's for sure.
I don't know. But I want to live in a world where it's... And I'm like, hold on a second. He's a public servant. Mm-hmm. He should be willing to meet with everybody.
Yeah, of course. Well, he's afraid about his image.
But he's already been elected.
I don't know if he'll last as, you know, if he gets elected again or what's going to happen, because he was a real turd with his marriage equality in Australia. So we'll see. But I just really love how Justin just kind of manages to get into situations like that.
He should be my publicist. The human Ken doll. But sometimes, you know, I always feel like you're only a good publicist if your client is somebody you love.
Oh, you gotta fall in love with him.
And Justin Dudlicka loves himself, so...
There's a guy, he's a professor in, I think it's Siberia, and so he, or in Russia, he got caught cheating on his wife because of the things he was liking on Instagram. She was looking at his account, he's like, why does he keep liking, you know, photos from this one account? What's going on there? So she goes and checks out the account, and it's done by one of the guy's students, because he was a professor. And then some of the pictures show, like, her in their house, her petting their kitten, her laying on their kid's bed. Oy. And then just being like, just another day to pay off my student bills or something. Yeah.
So she's doing sex work on the side?
You know, or something.
With a professor?
With the professor. Like,
honey, if you want to get an A, you got to get the D first.
And so she was just like, yeah. So what is this woman doing in our house? And so, you know,
so she found out she hit the roof, and
she hit the roof. Yeah, of course. But, you know,
in a happier world that she would have had a three way.
Mm-hmm.
But no, she has to end the marriage because he was having a little nookie with one of his students.
Yeah. So I guess they had an 18th month relationship, but then the husband was just like, I'll end you to her. So he was, you know, a bit of a jerk. So folks, you know, if you're cheating on your significant other, be careful of the things you like on Instagram, because they can follow that. And then they'll be like, what's
going
on?
You're on Instagram.
I am. Mark Fillion.
I'm on Instagram. Yeah. Fausto Fernos and Feast of Fun.
Yeah.
And it's been interesting because I wanted to post. I felt like, you know, having cancer is kind of the universe telling me to raise awareness for it, too, you know. And so I've been posting pictures of the cancer. At the same time, we got onto this app called Shmeel, which somebody was like, that's a terrible name for an app, Shmeel. It sounds like Shemail. And Shmeel. I was like, no, it's Shmeel.
Shmeel.
It's Uber
Yiddish, kind of,
for people who cook at home. Mm-hmm. And you can invite people into neighborhood, not to go into your house, but you give them a little, like, a bowl of food for $6.
Yeah.
And so you make, like, a little appointment when you're having dinner, and you can share your dinner with them.
So you set a time. So let's say you live in a neighborhood, or you're always making, like, a big pot of pasta. You want to get rid of some of it. You just sell it.
And so we created an account, and we made some, we've been practicing some of the dishes that we make for Cooking with Drag Queens, and I made some empanadas, cream cheese and guava filled empanadas. That's, can I say this? It's an upcoming episode of Cooking with Drag Queens with Monica Beverly Hills and Jade Sotomayor.
Mm.
And so we have these gorgeous, and these are our amazing empanadas. And so we sold a few of them to these guys, and they're like, it's kind of weird giving strangers, like, food in front of your house.
Because you run outside, too, right? Because they don't come to your house. They come to your door. So you kind of have to live in, like, a kind of a convenient location for people, or you have to be able to meet them. You can set the hours of when you want to do it.
And lucky for us, like, there's plenty of parking on our street.
And so are we listed as Feast of Fun on there?
No, just Fausto.
Just Fausto? Just look for Fausto?
If you live in Chicago, you know, if you want to eat the food that we make... Mm-hmm. You can have basically a Cooking with Drag Queens dinner every day.
Yeah, some of it's really damn good. So, you know, it's something kind of fun to play with. It's not a moneymaker, I don't think, you know. So it's
definitely not a moneymaker.
Because when you think about it, it's like you get $5.50 per serving. And then if you know, in restaurant business, you want to keep your food costs at around 30%.
Ain't going to happen with this.
You know, and so you're looking at, what are you going to do? Are you going to make something for $1.50?
And then it's kind of like you want to make something that's desirable.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
You want to also not rip people off.
Right.
Because they know where you live. Mm-hmm. They're going to come and find you.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're going to make you eat it.
But I have some good things I can make that are pretty inexpensive that could also, like, fill you up.
Well, one of the things I'm planning on to make is a kitchen sink cookie. And I thought I'd sell those, too, which is a chocolate oatmeal chocolate chip cookie with breakfast cereal and nuts in it.
And so what would you give, like, 2 cookies for $5, $6?
You can make them all little. You could just fill up the bowl with cookies. Cookies! I'll give you a cookie if you...
Cookies could be kind of expensive.
Cookies are super expensive, yeah. And yeah. That's the thing. It's like people are used to buying a bag of, like, you know, Keebler Elf garbage stuff. And when you actually make cookies at home, it's like the price goes up. Because you're using butter, you're using chocolate, you're using sugar.
That shit sounds cheap.
And, you know, fascinatingly enough, like,
and your work, your time,
yeah,
you're sitting around waiting for these people to show up.
So part of it is, you know, it's a fun way to meet people in the neighborhood, and it's a great way to, like, share stuff, but it's definitely not something you can make a living off of.
No. Yet.
Not yet.
So remember the hot felon Jeremy Meeks?
He was the, how can he I was forget the, he was the, those
mixed
eyes
race guy with the blue
his eyes. Eyes had me under arrest. He imprisoned us with his beauty.
So he's been dating a billionaire heiress.
Why wouldn't he?
And he knocked her up. And I guess he was cheating on his first wife.
With her.
And so, yeah, the first wife. But I think they're divorced now.
So is he going to be doing alimony to his first wife with his second wife's money?
Well, I don't think that's going to... well, she'll have to... I mean, he'll probably have to pay child support or something like that. But I don't think they're going to be able to... They're not going to be able to take the second wife's money because the first relationship had already ended. Although, maybe,
but he's engaged with a billionaire heiress.
But maybe since they were cheating, she might be able to sue them for what do they call that?
Alienation
of affection. They do that. You can sue people. It's not always very successful, but some people have done it. They say this person came in and they stole my man, and they can sue for that.
Well, I better sue Timothy Chalamet and Armie Hammer. Did you feel you know, people feel like we didn't discuss Call Me By Your Name enough on the show?
No, I guess we probably didn't. We kind of mentioned a little bit, and
you know, it's a great film, and I thought the film is more about being young and in love than it is about being a gay relationship. Yeah. And certainly the film really shines in the speech that the father gives towards the end of the film, but it does feel out of place taking place during the 1980s.
Mm-hmm. Well, it was pre-AIDS crisis, right? So it was like you already had some of the gay liberation. People's attitudes were changing. You know, the parents had gay friends. The father was also into, like, Greek culture and studying Greek statuaries and all that kind of stuff. And so he was familiar with that whole concept of, like, an older man taking a younger man as a protege and also having sex with him. So it was something that, you know, must have interest him. And so he saw, like, his young son having this interest in this older guy, and so he just
encouraged
it. The parents encouraged it because the mother is just like, I think my kid's queer. The father's like, yeah, our kid's probably gay. Let him have it.
And, let him get a nice Gollum strong Jew to have love. Because they're a Jewish family living in Italy. And they bring nice strong Armie Hammer to make him sweet love.
To impregnate him.
And he was proud of his Jewish heritage. That was a major aspect in the film, too. And the Judaism was kind of an allegory to their homosexuality.
For coming out,
yes. And so Armie Hammer is like showing the Star of David necklace, whereas Timothy Chalamet's character is very like, it doesn't matter that I'm Jewish. Right. I don't want people to know that I'm Jewish.
But then once he got a taste of that dick, he was just like, I'm Jewish.
I love a Jewish star.
Do you want to see my Star of David?
He destroyed a peach.
And, you know, I think also, too, it perfectly encapsulates the horniness that you feel like when you're a teenager. You're just like, you're so goddamn horny, you just don't know what to do sometimes.
You know, I've definitely have not had sex with a peach.
No?
I've had sex with the other things, but not peaches.
I tried to
fuck
an apple or something. Or, I don't know.
It's just too crispy.
Yeah, it just never works.
A nice ripe peach would be kind of nice, though.
I don't know if it would.
So in the movie, he removes the pit out of the peach somehow, and he uses the entire peach to slide up and down on his dick.
Yeah.
And when you see that poor peach afterwards, you're like, God bless you, peach.
Would you have eaten that peach?
I sure would have.
Mm-hmm. I bet you would have. But James Ivory, the guy who wrote the screenplay for it, said he was very disappointed that there was no dicks in it. He said in an interview, certainly in my screenplay, there was all sorts of nudity. But according to Luca, both actors had it in their contracts that there would be no frontal nudity. And there isn't, which I think is kind of a pity. Again, it's just this American attitude. Nobody seems to care that much or be shocked about a totally naked woman. It's the men. There is something that must be so deeply cultural that no one should ask why. But, you know, people get freaked out by penises. You know, vaginas don't attack people.
You know? Well,
and the other thing, too, is like what in our research here, what we've discovered here is that people get turned on by dicks. And even straight men get turned on by seeing a penis. And that's why penises are acceptable in straight porn, but they don't want to see the guy's body. And so they don't want guys to feel uncomfortable because all of a sudden they see a penis and it's going to drive them into some kind of homosexual frenzy.
One could say that James Ivory has a bone to pick. Ay, Dios mío. He's 89 years old.
Oh, my.
You go, Grandpa.
He's been working for a very, very long time.
You know, I appreciate that he, at the age of 89, is fighting for gay sexuality and an embrace of nudity in the male body in film.
We need more nudity.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. You know? Mm-hmm. I think that's fantastic.
Do you remember there was all those naked...
But not when it comes to Trump.
Do you remember all those
naked... I know where you're going with this one.
Remember all those naked...
Except Trump.
Naked Trump statues that were all over? Like, there's one in New York, San Francisco, Los Angeles, Cleveland. They had...
terrorizing the public with Trump's... nude body. Oh, my
grotesque
God.
Grotesque body.
Poor guy.
So, I know. It's like, I don't want to be a body fascist, but there's just something really gross about Trump and his body.
It's okay to be a body fascist when it comes to an actual fascist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. All right. You get a pass then. And so a lot of them were vandalized, but there was one that was not vandalized. And so that's going to be up for auction. They were made by the West Coast Anarchist Collective IndieCline. And they're hoping that it'll sell between $20,000 and $30,000. But, you know, would you want that?
Well, we have a statue here in our living room of Alita made by the late, great car mechanic, Korean War veteran, and large breast mannequin enthusiast Mike Dale Martin, who started out his career rebuilding mannequins with just a handful that he discovered at a yard sale. And over the years, he developed an addiction, a taste for finding mannequins and using car Bondo glue, making their boobs significantly bigger.
They're well endowed.
His wife said in one interview, "All right, Dale," because his name is Mike Martin, "just one more." And at the time of his death, he had almost 70
of them
in his home. Mm-hmm. His wife had moved out.
She was in a nursing home.
She was in a nursing home, but I actually went to see. And so the listeners said, "You got to go get this thing." And we bid, I think we only bid like $300 for it.
Mm-hmm. And but you also had to drive up to
Beloit, Wisconsin
to get it.
This little town in the middle of nowhere. And we got this wacky, crazy mannequin with big boobs. And now she sits here in our living room. And every drag queen that comes in wants to have her photo taken with her.
Mm. She's a beauty.
She's our
pretty woman.
Goddess. She's a Feast of Fun goddess that watches over us and protects us.
Mm.
And, you know, It's just such a crazy life we have here, you know, with highs and lows.
Should we start praying to her to get rid of your cancer?
Oh, we should start selling her to get rid of to pay for the cancer treatment.
Has she gone?
We might.
Has she gone up in value?
Anybody want to buy Alita? She's on sale. At least $300. I would sell for $1,000.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know. I really love
her. You can't part with her? Is it my life or the mannequin?
If I had to choose between your life and Alita, Alita could go.
Alita, you go fast. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like...
We have to do something with her.
Lady, your boobs are gorgeous, but you gotta go, honey. We need the money.
I want to thank everybody for listening. We gotta end the show here.
We gotta go.
We gotta go. Remember, it's GoFundMe.com/Fausto.
That's right. F as in fabulous. A-U-S as in sexy. T-O as in orgasm.
You know, if you want a shout out on the show for your donation, you know, leave a comment, say, hey, give me a shout out, or just contact me, whatever. If you want to hear your name on the podcast, let me know. I'm happy to do it.
Some people want to be anonymous, yeah, too. You can also do that anonymously, yeah, too, so can, people yeah. don't know that you care.
Yeah. I don't want anyone to know that I care.
This, you know, but we really mm-hmm. do appreciate all your financial support, mm-hmm. and you know, it goes to a good cause, keeping me alive.
Aww.
Or, you know, during a procedure, I don't feel like my life is in any danger. But we don't know.
You don't.
What is in danger is our financial situation, paying for these bills. Mm. And, you know, the
some people just tell you to get a real job so you can pay for it.
I do have a real job. And I do. It's like I have other jobs than this.
But it's just also, too, is like if you have, you know,
I just don't have
more
that.
Of a real job, then this job goes away.
It's you can't, even if I had a full-time job, I still wouldn't have the money to pay for a lot of these surgeries. Mm. It's ridiculous. Mm. This is what it means to be an American citizen. And Trump is trying to take that away, what right. little support we have, to raise our healthcare costs even more. It's not pretty. It's terrifying. And, you know, I've always said, it's like, we can overcome a lot when we work together. And we've relied on your support all these years, and we know we can count on your support now. And it is deeply humbling and extremely moving to see people reaching into their pockets and helping me survive so we can be around here for the future. Thank you guys so much for listening.
I'm Mark Fillion.
I am Fausto Fernos. I'm still here. I am still here. I'm not going anywhere.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye.